This is Primetime on KTEP, a program that focuses on economic development, mobility, security, and quality of life issues in El Paso and surrounding areas.
Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of El Paso Primetime. I'm Richard Dayoub, Thunderbird Management Consulting, your host. And today I have with me for the very first time, Mr. Chris Yeagle, who's serving as the interim chief executive officer for El Pasoans Fighting Hunger Food Bank. Chris, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you here. And of course, you and I have known each other for some time now.
Absolutely.
In your previous life, when you served in uniform, and I've been fortunate enough to get to know you as you've served now in the interim position at the food bank. And of course, full disclosure to our audience, I serve on the board, so I didn't want anybody to think that I'm trying to hide anything from them. But there's been so much going on in our community. And of course, the food bank, for all the years I've served on the board, has been such an integral part of meeting, partially at least, the needs of the least among us, as the phrase seems to be used so much today, within our community, within our region. Yeah. And so I want you to spend some time talking about it. It's been quite some time since we've had the food bank on, and we've had so much happening within our community, much of which I want you to talk about. Before we get to those kinds of things, what's maybe some of the things that you have observed in your limited time serving as the interim CEO within the community, within the food bank?
Well, you know, one thing I've noticed is the need here is really high. You know, obviously we see it right out of our window every day at the food bank. We have a direct distribution model, which is a little different from other food banks around the country, where we distribute the bulk of our food right out of the food bank itself in our Mercado-style distribution line. And so I get to see it every day. And we serve on average 1,500 families a day, Tuesday through Friday. And it's consistent. Tuesdays is overwhelming. It trails off later in the week, but the average is still about 1,500. And it's just eye-opening when you first see that. And then that's one aspect of it. On the other side of things, you know, as a leader in the food bank, you know, I've been exposed to the community in many different levels, including at the city level, the county, with local industry and the private industry. One thing I've noticed too, this community really rallies. I mean, I've had nothing but offers of support, actual support. Another nonprofit CEO reached out to me early on and said, why don't we meet together about every month or two and just talk about all things leadership? And that was her proactive way to give me support and for me to really support her, I think. And so we did that a few times. So I've had just nothing but great experience with the community. So the need is here, and that's clear. But then also, too, I think the community is ready and willing to support what we're trying to do.
Well, you mentioned at the beginning that you serve on average 1,500 people a day in a Mercado style. So first of all, for those who don't understand what a Mercado style is as it pertains to the food bank, why don't you give us a brief explanation?
Sure. It's basically a distribution line, but we offer client choice, what's known in the industry as a choice. And so that means that we have anywhere between 10 and 15 stations of food distribution within the line, and they're free and able to take whichever ones they want. So they could pick this and that and skip those and move on. On average, we try to get them between 60 and 80 pounds of food, and they're able to come once a week. So 60-80 pounds once a week, and you know, that seems like a lot, perhaps, maybe if you're talking about a single family household, but if you're talking about a big family, 60-80 pounds is, you know, you have to be wise with what you choose and how you cook it and use it.
Make it last. And so related to that, I have a question for you. Perhaps our listening audience might have the same question. How many people does it take to serve that many people every day, and how do you do it?
Well, I'll call it a skeleton crew of staff. And the reason I call it that is because if my staff had to do it on our own, there's no way we could do it. We have a good, you know, 5 to 7 dedicated staff that man just that line every day. But the bulk of the support comes from the volunteer community. Any day we have between 5 and 50 volunteers, and that's Tuesday through Saturday. So even on Saturday, when we're not open to the public, we have a lot of processing and breaking down of pallets and reboxing and things like that to do. And the volunteer community is consistent and hardworking and really an integral part of our operations.
I'll get to this towards the end of the interview so that it hopefully will remain locked in the minds of those listening to the show, but I want them to know how they can get involved with the food bank if they wish to volunteer themselves.
Okay.
And so you might touch on that now, and then we'll repeat it.
Sure. Well, we do have a volunteer coordinator. Her name's Tony Bustamante. The best way to do it probably is to go to our website, ElPasoansFightingHunger.org. On there, you'll see a place to donate your time, to give your time to volunteer. And then what you do is you'll just fill out a few details. There's also a number if you prefer to do it over the phone. And then what we'll do is we'll schedule your time. And so what that helps us to do is to plan ahead and make sure we have adequate support and staffing on the days throughout the week that we need it. And that's the best way to get involved.
Great. Thank you. And so, as we spoke before, the importance of our audience understanding food insecurity, first of all, how severe it is in our community. If you could give a little bit of an explanation and then tie that to the other piece we talked about, which is economic stability.
Sure thing. So a couple years ago, actually 2024, UTEP did a study, and it confirmed the number of food insecurity here in the region, and that's 35%. So essentially, in El Paso region, now we do cover 3 counties. We also cover El Paso, Culberson, and Hudspeth counties. Those last two are pretty rural. So the majority of that study is, basically related to
El Paso County.
El Paso County. 35% is a third. That's double of any city in Texas other than us that's equal or higher size. Now, here's the alarming part, though. There was a study done last year. Results are out, but not 100% confirmed yet, that indicate that that number's actually increased closer to 40%. So we're waiting on the final numbers, but it's growing. So food insecurity is a sizable problem here in the region. It's a community issue. It's not just something that we're fighting. You know, we're at the tip of the spear. We're at the point of impact. But really, it's a community situation that we really have to rally behind if we're gonna wipe this out.
Okay, thank you. And so this economic stability piece that you talked about with me.
Yeah.
To just share, sort of connect the dots between food insecurity, or hopefully the reverse of that,
right,
and economic stability.
In one of the marks of a developed world, a developed country, is that they have that country has hunger kind of in control. Some kind of hunger's always going to plague the earth. It's been here since the beginning of the time, and it'll be here to the end. And I don't profess to say that we're going to make it zero, but we could definitely make some strides. So it's here. It's higher in our city than is comfortable. The economic growth in a region is largely dependent on how well we have things like food insecurity under control. So there's an inverse relationship between the two. So if food insecurity is out of control, then economic stability is limited. It's kind of like building a house on the sand. I mean, you really need to have a strong foundation, which is really hard to accomplish on the sand. So you build on the rock. So what we're trying to do in this community is grow economically. But I think what we're missing is we've got to get the basics, blocking and tackling in football. You have to get the basics under control first. And so speaking to the business owners, the business community right now, is if you want to grow economically the way that you're destined to grow, we have to first address these community needs, food insecurity, for instance, access to technology, jobs, things like that, in order to really lay the groundwork for you to be successful.
So you mentioned jobs. You are entering into a new agreement with Layla Melendez and Workforce Solutions Borderplex, if you could speak to that a little bit.
Absolutely. We're very excited about that. So we have a Spark Logistics and Warehouse Training Program in-house, and it's an 8-week program. And coming out of it, students get 5 or more nationally recognized certifications in warehouse logistics, in food handling, and OSHA certifications. They're all nationally recognized, so that makes them very employable. And with the Workforce Commission, we're able to really just guarantee a steady stream of applicants into the program. So it's a win-win situation for us and them, and we're excited to be a partner in it. It's going to provide more qualifications with people into the community and hopefully increase, you know, their ability to be employable.
How long is this Sparks program? I mean, is it a class that lasts 4 weeks, 6 weeks?
It's an 8-week program. We do one cohort, and then we take a little administrative break, and then we start another one, and that goes continuously.
Roughly how many participants do you get during one of these sessions?
So 17 is our high water mark so far as a class size goes. We're looking to expand that. We've had some grant money come in and is coming in from some generous donors who are going to help us to build a new training room. It's going to be pretty state of the art. In fact, we're going to have virtual reality capability, VR, to where we can simulate driving a forklift and operating different things logistically in a safe manner, kind of as a crawl, walk, run scenario. So they'll be able to crawl through VR. And then we actually put them as part of this training into our warehouse on our own equipment, our own forklifts and different equipment, and then we get them hands-on training. So, I mean, they come out of that program excited and qualified and federally certified and very employable.
That's great. That's great. So you mentioned that, which triggered a thought for me to share with our audience. Where are you? Where's your location?
We're on Plaza Circle, in that same circle as Western Tech on the far east side near the Zaragoza Bridge. 9541 Plaza Circle is our location. We actually have 183,000 square foot facility. It's a huge facility.
It is. And over the years, candidly, since I've been on the board for, some would argue, too long, but certainly a long time, we've seen it transform from just being this gigantic warehouse building into a dynamic facility that provides all these various services and has now commercial size freezers and commercial size refrigerators and a warehouse that was shelving that's just... It blows the mind of the average citizen who walks in there for the first time, and all these vehicles moving around inside, forklifts and things of that nature to stock those shelves or unstock those shelves in some cases. So thank you for sharing that with us. As we talk about the mission there and what you all are doing, I think it's important that our audience know just how diverse the organization has to be, how responsive the organization has to be. I mean, we went through, it was before your time there, but we went through COVID and the impact that had on folks and their need for food and their situation of food insecurity as just one example. But the government shut down this past fall. That was an anomaly, and I hope it remains an anomaly. We don't need to have that happen again. But if you wouldn't mind speaking a little bit about your role, the food bank's role, during that government shutdown.
Sure thing. That really sticks out in my mind as one of the times where my team has really shined. They've been just phenomenal in all aspects, but that time especially, they shined. So I was actually out of town when the beginning of the shutdown started. I was on a personal trip, but actually I was also doing some work. I was visiting another food bank in a different part of the country up in Las Vegas, food bank. And so I was getting ready to walk into a meeting there and kind of tour their facility. And I'll never forget this call I got. So when I got out of the Army, I was a captain. And I got a call from a commander over at Fort Bliss, a colonel. And she said, Chris, I need your help. You know, first of all, going back to my Army years, when a colonel calls you, you know, you kind of perk up a little
bit. You want to pay attention.
Yeah, you pay attention. And I thought it was a surreal feeling. Here I am, you know, in this role and getting called by a colonel. So she was a commander of a unit over at Fort Bliss. And she said, Chris, I need your help. We're getting into a point where some of my civilian employees are going to miss their third paycheck. And I need your help. And so we put together for that particular request 1,500 emergency boxes. Now, here's the thing. This population was experiencing food insecurity for the first time, mostly. So there was a level of dignity involved and, you know, some special consideration. We ended up actually loading those boxes on our trucks and taking it out to their facility and delivering it and giving it to them in a place where they could come kind of get it in a private way and just, you know, help them through this mental situation of not having food on their table for their tables and stuff. And so, man, that was something. You know, we rallied together and got those boxes done. And then a couple other agencies called us, and we responded there. All in, I think we made just under 5,000 emergency boxes for the government shutdown.
Yeah, and I think you guys were also helping out at Beaumont for the civilian employees there as well.
That's right. Yeah. In fact, actually, that was the commander I was mentioning, the colonel that called me, the commander of Beaumont, Colonel Gray called me up. And so that was one of our major responses during that time.
Well, I think it's important for our audience to understand just how dynamic and unfortunately, far too often, how fluid the situation is and how circumstances beyond your control have such a dramatic impact on your day-to-day operations that you have to be, frankly, very responsive in a very quick way
right.
and shift gears
right.
in order to meet all these unique situations that arise. We talked about earlier the situation that happened out in Northeast El Paso with the water main break and all these folks suddenly having no water available to them. Mm. And so I would say to you, thank you and your staff, your dynamic staff, because you have a staff of how many right now, roughly?
71.
71,
mm-hmm.
Which is... sounds like a lot of people, but it isn't when you talk about how many people you're serving every day.
Mm-hmm.
If I owned a company where I was trying to make money and I had 1,500 customers a day coming through my doors, mm-hmm. I doubt I could do it with 71 employees,
right?
So to kind of put that in perspective for our listening audience, in the few minutes that we have left, and I want to remind our audience, for those who tuned in maybe a few minutes late, I'm interviewing Chris Yeagle, who is the interim CEO of El Paso's Fighting Hunger Food Bank. And we're talking about what they're doing, their mission, how dynamic and fluid the organization has to be, how nimble to meet all the unique demands from our community. And so that leads me to my final question of you. How can the citizens of our community, how can our listeners be of help? And if so, how do they get involved to be of help?
Sure thing. Well, first of all, Richard, thank you for this time to talk a little bit more about this passion that we're a part of. I mean, it's great. It's great to be part of a noble mission. There's three ways to get involved. The first way is come out and volunteer. The lifeblood of our operation really happens at the volunteer level. You can come out and be a part of the volunteer that's client-facing or our neighbors in need-facing, where you'll help distribute the food directly to them. Or you could be a part of the back-end processing, where we'll break down pallets and make emergency boxes and things like that. We can use you Tuesday through Friday on the website, elpasoingsfightinghunger.org. You can go on there to schedule a time to come on out. It's a great team building as well. Bring your organization out. Come make a day of it. We also have meeting space available if you want to have a team meeting in conjunction with your volunteering. There's some options there. More to come on that. We're actually developing some bigger space in that area. The second thing is you can be a part of the giving family. You know, 60% 80% of our subsistence comes from government and state funding. The rest, the 40, is really up to us. And without that 40, we close our doors. There's no way we could do what we do. So being a part of the giving, the donor family, would be amazing. And then lastly, you know, tell our story. You know, it's surprising to me how many people I talk to and I tell them about the food bank and they think, wow, I've never heard of it. Or they say to me, I've never heard of that. What do you guys do? And so awareness in the community would be super helpful. You know, if I could just end on a point, you know, the title of the food bank is El Pasoans Fighting Hunger. And I want to clarify that it's not my staff fighting hunger. It's not my staff and the board fighting hunger. It's all of us together. It's El Pasoans coming together to fight hunger, not only as our community, but also in our other counties as well. But all of us have a role, and all of us are vital in really getting ahead of the food insecurity that plagues our region.
One last thing just to touch on, because you mentioned Fort Bliss earlier, but you guys have developed a new partnership, Fort Bliss United in Service. Mm-hmm. If you could just touch on that very briefly.
Yeah. So I think before my role as interim CEO, I was in Major Gifts, and I don't know what I was doing, honestly. I just reached out an event at the end of last summer where we had about 200 soldiers come out and some leaders from Fort Bliss, and we had some opening remarks and a small ceremony and a tour, and then the soldiers volunteered that whole day. And since then, we have reaffirmed our handshake with Fort Bliss. And, you know, Colonel Sork has been instrumental in that, and Sergeant Major Theus. Both great leaders and great partners of the food bank. I'm very very honored to know those two gentlemen. And so now we get a regular influx on soldiers on a monthly basis that really helps us out.
Well, thank you. And actually, thank you for mentioning them, because they were just on our show last week.
That's great.
And both Sergeant Major Theus and Colonel Soika are friends of mine. Mm. They've been on the show a couple of times. And you're right, what they're doing out there and reaching out in our community as well is just exceptional and deeply appreciated. Chris, thanks for being on the show today. I wish you continued success as an organization, and I want to encourage our audience to continue to support the food bank in any way you see fit. You talked about volunteerism, so I want to just point out something. I'm a fairly busy guy myself, so I may not be able to give you a full day on a Saturday volunteering or on a Friday, but I can maybe come out and serve for 2 or 3 hours, because every little bit helps.
Absolutely.
So I want you to think in those terms if you're interested in contacting the food bank to help out in some small way. Every little bit makes a difference. Again, if you want to help, reach out to ElPasoansFightingHunger.org. Mm-hmm. And sign up to volunteer. You can also go on there to make financial contributions to help out. And as you know from listening to the show on a regular basis, my usual closing is that you're being reminded you're listening to KTEP. That is your NPR station for the Southwest. We are a nonprofit, and we rely on our members. If you're already a member, thank you for being a member. And if you're not, we'd love for you to consider becoming a member. Go to ktep.org, click on the donate button. You can become, as I am, a sustaining member, and you can support this organization throughout the year. You can contribute as much or as little as you wish. Maybe pass on one or two of those $7 or $8 lattes that you pick up in the drive-thru at your favorite coffee shop each week, and what a difference that little contribution makes to us. So we thank you for listening to us, and we wish you a very happy and enjoyable Saturday.
El Paso Primetime is a production of KTEP. Views expressed by the host and guest don't necessarily reflect those of KTEP. For inquiries about our public affairs programming, email ktep@utep.edu. Richard Dayoub appears courtesy of Thunderbird Consulting. The producer and editor is Daisy Morales. The show is recorded at the Communication Department at the University of Texas at El Paso. To learn more about the program or to listen to past episodes, visit ktep.org.